Do you trust your congressman to bring jobs back to Michigan? Can we rely on Washington to save our Michigan economy? Well, today we have a special treat. We have Congressman Gary Peters on the line representing Michigan's 9th Congressional District. Representative Peters is running for re-election in one of the toughest economies this state has ever seen. Congressman, welcome to the show.
Scott, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Congressman, I don't know what's going on in Washington, Congressman, but here in Michigan, there is no bigger question than this. Where are the jobs? How can we get people more employed in the state of Michigan?
Well, you're absolutely right, Scott. There is no bigger question. It's one that I'm completely focused on and was focused on from day one when I was elected to Congress back in January of last year. And as you recall, it was a particularly scary time for us here in Michigan and as well as around the country. In fact, when I was sworn in January, the country was losing about 700,000 jobs a month. The economy was reeling from the catastrophe that we saw on Wall Street and the policies of the past that allowed Wall Street greed to get out of hand and bring the economy to its knees. And we've been working to pick up the pieces since then, particularly here in Michigan, where we continue to be one of the top states in terms of unemployment as a result of what happened with the auto industry. And so my focus has been jobs, 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 jobs. It's all I've been focused on since day one. We've got to continue that work. The last few months, we've seen some positive news as far as private sector jobs, but it's not enough. We need to do more. We need to recover from that meltdown. And I've focused myself primarily on our small businesses. That, to me, is the best way to get the Michigan economy moving. It's going to be our entrepreneurs, our small businesses. In fact, they generally hire about 2 out of every 3 people to begin with, so that is the engine of growth. We've got to make sure that they have the resources and the environment necessary to prosper. And along those lines, the one area that I have particularly focused is small business lending. The one thing that I hear from small business owners, and you know, I live here in Oakland County. I go to Washington to represent Oakland County, but I fly back every weekend, and I'm here talking to business owners and people throughout the district. And the one thing that I heard over and over again was the inability for small businesses to have access to loans. The banks were simply not lending to them. And as you know, if a business can't have access to a loan, they can't grow, they can't expand, they can't hire, they can't even just have basic working capital to run their business.
So, well, that's for sure. And I run a small law firm here and a small business owner, and I have employees, and we do different types of investments, and we have to get access to small loans and extended capital too.
Right.
And how can Congress help us? How can you help the local banks here in terms of helping small businesses get access to that kind of credit?
Well, that has been exactly what we did through the small business lending bill that just recently passed. The president signed it into law about 3 weeks ago, which will help our local community banks have the capital necessary to get it out to Main Street and to small businesses. We know all too well here in Michigan that the big Wall Street banks are simply not lending to folks here in our state. The folks who will lend to our state or into our communities are our local community banks, but they have been stressed as a result of the declining value of real estate. Their collateral has dropped for their loans, and so FDIC and other federal regulators come in and say you've got to raise capital in order to lend, but that's a difficult proposition. Not a lot of people see a small Michigan bank as a great investment, so it's tough to get private equity in. And yet if they don't have capital, they can't lend. And that's what the small business lending bill does, is it puts capital into these small banks. But the strong incentive, though, not to sit on it. It doesn't do any good to have them just sitting on that capital. They've got to get it out in the hands of small business people. And in a nutshell, the way it works is that money will be deposited in these small community banks in the form of non-voting preferred stock that can be used as capital. They pay us as taxpayers a 5% interest rate for that money. But if they actually lend it out to small businesses, that rate can drop to as low as 1%.
And is there a lot of red tape to get through to those loans? Is it something that we can try to get rid of that so we can get some of the money in the local community?
Yeah, there isn't the red tape because it's not like an SBA loan or something that you have to apply for directly. This is just capital in the bank, and then you would go through whatever the bank's procedure is for a loan, but it would be no different than any other loan that they would put out to a customer. So it's capital in the bank that they can use. And I just add that we want to really make sure that money actually gets out into the hands of small businesses. So the 5% rate that a bank pays if they don't lend it out to a small business, the rate actually goes up to 7%. And if they want to pay 7% to taxpayers for money, we'll take that money all day long. But we really want to get it out in the hands of our job creators, which are our small businesses, and that's why the rate drops to as low as 1%. But more importantly, it puts capital into these banks, and with capital, they can lend it out. It's a $30 billion bill, but because of, as you know, the way the banking industry works and the way they can leverage that with private capital, it represents about $300 billion of lending power through our small community banks, assets of $10 billion or less. These are banks that represent only 20% of the assets of the banking community, but they represent fully 55% of all small business loans. So this is how you get money into the hands of our small business people who need it to create jobs.
And, you know, isn't it true that there's so many small community banks around this country because what happened in the last 2 years that had to go bankrupt, where the big ones, they survived. They took the money. They're doing okay. But the small ones, they're the ones that are having such a hard time surviving.
Absolutely, and that's why this is so important. And to get them out, these local bankers, of course, want to lend it out because that's how they make their living, is lending it out. But they need to have the capital to do that. And we want to have it, banks in our local community. These are folks who know the business people personally. They have relationships. If you go to a big Wall Street bank, you're just basically a number and not somebody with personal relationships like you have with our smaller local community banks. They're the ones that are going to put the money in the hands of our small businesses, which is why this is something I've been fighting for a year and a half. I'm pleased it finally passed. I was hoping we would have, and we should have passed this a year ago, but at least we've got it out there now, and I think it's going to have a big impact here in Michigan in particular. This is a big problem around the country, but in particular in Michigan, when you have a higher unemployment rate, the capital markets are not as efficient. Bank lending is much more problematic. This is particularly important. And in fact, an amendment that I got on this bill as well, this came through my committee as well, will help smaller manufacturers. And the way the amendment runs is to help some state programs that are particularly helpful to small manufacturers. And the formula that I was able to put into the bill will favor states like Michigan, bringing even more resources into our state.
What do you see, Congressman, as the new technology for Michigan? Because, you know, obviously everybody is waiting for the auto industry to be vibrant again, to employ so many people over here. And yet, you know, the studies really show there's got to be another technology, some other manufacturing base that's going to come in and really at least supplement what's going on with automotive. What do you see as the next technology here in Michigan?
Well, you're absolutely right about that. Now, first off, of course, we had to make sure that we still had a domestic auto industry in this country, and that's why it was so important for the government investments that helped both General Motors and Chrysler. Had that not happened, those companies would have liquidated, and that would have been absolutely catastrophic for this area, certainly for the whole country, but for us. And since those investments have been made, the auto industry is stabilizing, and in fact, in the last year, the industry has added 75,000 jobs, which is important. But, you know, you bring up a good point. These companies aren't going to be the same size as they were in the past. We have to diversify. But my view, especially with the auto-related, is that the key thing for Michigan is to continue to be at the forefront of advanced manufacturing. And it doesn't really matter what you make as long as you know how to make something. I was at a recent seminar for auto suppliers who were looking at diversifying their facilities, and they were looking at a very promising area for them, which is the manufacture of medical instruments. And the medical instruments require precision engineering, precision manufacturing, the same type of skills that are used for auto parts to also make medical instruments. So, you know, in my mind, as long as you have the expertise, the engineering, manufacturing, skilled workforce to do advanced manufacturing, it doesn't really matter what you make. You can make anything. And certainly medical instruments is a prime example of that and really some great promise for some of our auto suppliers. And in my district here in Oakland County, I have more auto suppliers than any other congressional district in the country. And getting auto suppliers to be making other types of things in different industries is a very exciting development and one that I know we can excel at.
We're talking with U.S. Congressman Gary Peters from the 9th District, who's running on the Democratic ticket. You know, I want to talk for a second about what's going on with people saying this is a Republican year. And yet, you know, there's really some races around this country, but especially in Michigan that, I mean, especially because the unions are so involved here in Michigan, that I think we really need a Democrat to be able to support what's going on in the change of our economy. Is it a Republican year? Do we have to be worried about what's going on with that?
Well, I think certainly we need to make sure everybody's getting out to vote. You know, I don't believe The pundits, and the reason I don't is because every race is local. When people are voting for a member of Congress, they have a choice between two individuals in that particular district. And in my district in Oakland County, the gentleman that I'm running against is pretty far to the right. He announced his campaign at a Tea Party rally, and he's a guy that during the primary wanted to see President Obama's birth certificate and catered to the birther movement and some of those more fringe groups. That doesn't represent Oakland County. Oakland County is a centrist county. Folks want to see practical problem solving. It's what I've brought to the last 2 years, my 22 years of business experience. The way I look at the issues that are facing us and the problems is that we've got to find practical solutions. And that those are the kind of choices people will be making in districts. But certainly it's very true that we have to be sure that everybody is getting out to vote and making sure that their voices are heard. Groups like the Tea Party, for example, are very loud. They make a lot of noise. They get a lot of media attention. I do not believe they represent the majority of folks in Oakland County. But the only way that that voice is heard, and folks who may not be part of a far-right movement, the way their voice is heard, and it can be heard very loud and very clear, and that's to show up on November 2nd and vote.
But there is something about the Tea Party, whether you agree with what they say or not. You know, I look at it in terms of, for instance, I've got a student up at, a daughter up in Michigan State. And, you know, it gets people more involved when there's more discussion. I like, whether you like Tea Party or not, I like the fact that people are getting more involved, whether they're Democrat, Republican, whatever it is, when you get especially the students involved, I like that they're having discussions up at these universities.
Oh, absolutely. No, that is the way the American system works, and the more dialogue, the better. The thing that I just hope that as we are having this dialogue, that it's done in a civil fashion, that people are not shouted down if they have a different opinion and are not called names. That's not that's certainly not healthy to the democratic process. But having everybody's voice heard in a civil way is the way the system works. If it is not civil, then that is not productive, and it's certainly not going to help us solve the problems that we need to collectively deal with.
You know, I wanted to talk about that because I did talk just the other day with a bunch of kids up at Michigan State, and there I want to keep the kids graduating these schools here in Michigan.
Right.
We want to be able to not have them go, and while Chicago, New York are great cities, we want to have them stay here from our universities and from our high schools. And now that there's so, the unions here are struggling so hard, there are people that are going to college, which is great, but then they're leaving our state. So we want to be able to keep them here. What is there a plan that we can have to keep our kids and our students graduating our schools here in Michigan?
We have to. It is all about jobs, and I have that same fear as any parent. My son, who recently graduated from college, did get a job here in the Detroit area, which we were very pleased about. But I have my 15-year-old daughter and 13-year-old daughter, and I want to make sure that they have the opportunity to stay here in Michigan and to raise their family. We want to have everybody close by, and I think I share that with nearly every parent that I know, that you'd love to have your kids stay near to you. And that's why I'm totally focused on jobs. What keeps our children here is jobs and the opportunity to work. Michigan is a great place to raise a family. It's just a wonderful place to live, but folks have to have employment. So that's why diversifying our economy, capitalizing on what we have with advanced manufacturing, but also really building on the incredible intellectual strengths that we have in this area, too. The one statistic that I love to tell my colleagues in Washington who often don't understand Michigan is that in Southeast Michigan, we have more engineers than any other region of the country. It's an incredible intellectual resource for us. We've got to make sure that we've got policies in place that allow those engineers to do what they best, which is innovate and create the products of tomorrow. It's why I also serve on the Science and Technology Committee in Congress and have authored the Advanced Vehicle Technology Act, which is an act that will provide public-private resources for research and development, not only long-term R&D, but commercialization of projects. And you know, it's those kind of things to help our businesses and our small businesses have the tools that they need to be competitive in a global environment and build for Michigan's strengths, which is advanced manufacturing, incredible engineering talent, and a very well-trained, skilled workforce. So we've got all the resources here. We've got to be focused on keeping our human resources here locally and making sure that they can prosper.
Well, that is for sure, especially when you have so many individuals here that need the jobs. You know, and I wanted to ask you about the military, too. How ridiculous was it that this don't ask, don't tell policy? I can't believe it's been around for so long. It just seems like one of our most discriminating policies. Agree or disagree?
I agree. And in fact, I support the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I served in the military as a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy Reserve. And I can tell you, the only thing I was concerned about our servicemen and women were whether or not they could do their job and do it well. And what I found is that folks that were there were patriotic and worked hard, and that policy gets in the way of what is important, which is focusing on defending our country. So it needs to be repealed. In fact, I spoke out on that on the floor of the House to repeal it. And you look at other militaries. In fact, actually last night I was at a dinner celebrating the Israeli Defense Force, and it's interesting, the Israeli Defense Force, which is probably one of the finest fighting armies in the world, gay and lesbian soldiers serve openly. There's no discrimination whatsoever. They're very proud of that, and they are certainly a very capable fighting force.
We've been talking with U.S. Representative Gary Peters. Thank you for joining us on the show. We'd love to have you back after the election, and good luck on November 2nd.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Great to be with you. Thank you.